You're listening to the Zandbergen Report, where wealth strategies and investment wisdom collide with Bart Zandbergen, your distinguished host and certified financial planner.
Welcome to the Zandbergen Report, a showcase for wealth strategies and investment wisdom that's essential for our evolving world. I'm your host, Bart Zandbergen. In studio, as usual, we have Paul. Paul, something different about you today.
I am not dressed in cargo shorts and old beat-up T-shirts like I was at the University of Michigan 100 years ago.
You've got, like, your best hoodie. And I think your hair, you may have brushed your hair.
I brushed my hair this morning. I look like I had to go to a meeting this morning. I had to go to a tech-based thing, so I had to look like a real business person sort of
all
today.
Right.
Here.
So it's not just me.
Not a grungy engineer. Well, you'd appreciate, because your guest, we were talking offline, it went to the University of Michigan. This is the business attire I acquired at the University of Michigan, which was Birkenstocks back in the old day. And shorts, and anything over 20 degrees, we wore shorts, and big parkas and T-shirts. And I've carried that fashion sense through me the rest of my life here.
So. That explains a lot. So speaking of my guest, Paul, I'm feeling a little bit inadequate today.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So we've got yourself, who is a longtime radio professional, on-air voice, and our guest today. You may not know this, Paul.
I didn't.
But he is an ex-DJ.
Oh, you're kidding.
So
I wonder if he started. I started at the University of Michigan. I ran the college radio station there way back when, 100 million years ago.
WCBN FM Ann Arbor, 88.3.
Yeah, in fact, I still have right here. I don't even know if we could show this up here, but I'll put this up in the video. There's my FCC third class license right there.
Well, now that says Paul 1875. There was radio in Ann Arbor back then. That's fantastic.
I was there just a couple years after it was founded. Yeah, back then.
Gilda Radner, SNL alum.
Yes,
you know that?
She was there, I think, just right after I was. But I was there with the great John Sinclair, the old hippie radical. If you go back and Google him, started the White Panther Party. He was one of the founders of the radio station.
That's fantastic.
So you guys realize I'm running a show here, right?
Back to you, Bart.
We have an old home week here, yeah.
So our guest is Todd Glatis. He works for a company called 10X, 10X Commercial. He's going to tell us all about that and all about technology and real estate. But for starters, Todd, can you tell us a little bit about how you got to where you are today?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I started a long time ago back in Atlanta, went to the University of Michigan, as Paul duly noted, ended up at the University of Wisconsin in Madison for law school, spent some time in the United States Army as a captain in the JAG Corps and quartermaster, and obviously I knew I had a passion for law and government, political science, ended up working for a law firm in Miami down in South Florida, and I met the founders of what became Auction.com 10X over 15 years ago, and they pretty much taught me the business of real estate and the power of the auction, running a live ballroom auction to dispose of real estate. And then, of course, here we are now 15 years later. We were bought by private equity last year, and it's all about technology, and it's all about how technology, as we've seen it infiltrate every business that we're a part of today, infiltrating real estate and, in fact, commercial real estate.
Yeah. Well, speaking of technology, let's just get right into it. How has the real estate industry, particularly commercial real estate, been affected by technology?
Well, that's a very interesting question. I mean, technology has slowly become part of the norm in commercial real estate. It was not a few years back. When we ran our first commercial auction online back in 2010, everybody said to us, there is absolutely no way anybody is going to bid $10 million, $15 million by pressing a button on their computer. And here we are, many years later, we've sold over $18 billion of commercial real estate through the platform, over $53 billion if you include residential. So absolutely, investors, commercial investors, certainly have adopted the new technologies that are out there, just like they would, say, for Amazon or buying just about anything online. Right now, we're starting to see that slow adoption by commercial real estate brokers and sellers of commercial real estate as they start to understand the power of what buying and trading online can do. Those efficiencies, marketing across the planet. So there's a lot of, I would call it slow adoption, but it's coming fast and furious.
What were those early days like? What was it to get this in people's mindset?
It was very difficult in the very beginning because, again, our special servicer clients were looking for a specific purpose, and that was to liquidate, to dispose of service-based commercial real estate assets that they had taken back through foreclosure. And so the auction platform provides a very time-sensitive mechanism by which you can dispose of real estate quickly. It's on a clock. You can mobilize and push as many bidders into an online environment as possible. And that's different from a live auction. If any of you have ever been to a car auction or an auction at the LA Convention Center or some type of, well, maybe a cattle auction, I don't know. But if you've seen an auction live, it's about generating excitement and creating a buzz in the room to have as many paddles go up, say for a wine auction, if you've ever been to those, Sotheby's, those types of things, and I've seen those also. And so that online, the ability to create that excitement online for an auction, very powerful. And you're not just talking about people in a room. It's not just, say, folks here in Orange County or people in L.A. You're talking about people bidding from across the globe. We've had bidders from Canada. We've had bidders from Europe. We've had, you know, New York, Miami, Dallas bidding on an asset, say, here in Los Angeles. So very interesting how, in a way, we've sort of democratized the process by allowing, really turning the world flat a little bit and allowing everybody to participate.
Yeah. What percent? Maybe I'll ask. Do you have any idea what percentage of, like, overall? We'll start with commercial real estate sales are via auction versus traditional.
It is a very small amount at the moment. Yeah. Typically, again, most deals are run through your commercial real estate brokerage on the retail side. But what we are slowly learning is, and what we have become as we have modified our business model, is to become a tool for those real estate brokers. We are starting to really work on data and providing brokers with much more powerful analytics around sales in the area, comps, buyers, bidding behaviors, buying strategies. And so what we are now doing is pivoting really more towards being a great marketplace for commercial real estate brokers and professionals who interact with sellers and buyers to push product. And so, like I said, a lot of dashboards, a lot of analytics, automation, really trying to make that transaction more efficient. And commercial real estate is not super efficient. It's very offline.
Yeah.
A lot of phone calls, a lot of emails, a lot of meetings. And so to push all of that online is difficult, but we're slowly getting there.
Is there a particular either niche and or type of seller that fits kind of the MO of an auction seller?
Well, I would say that our platform at the moment allows just about any seller to participate, because what we now offer is not just the mechanism of auction, but we also offer a non-auction strategy, which, again, very similar to what our real estate brokers in the community work with now. It allows them to manage a transaction online. We call it Offer Select, but it allows our brokers to manage a deal online, manage offers online, talk back and forth between, say, those individuals that submitted those offers, talk about contingencies. And so it is another way in which we're reaching out to our brokerage community to understand the best way that makes it work for them, and whether that is an auction or not, depending on their client. You know, again, depending on the needs of the client, because an auction's not for everybody. You know, you really need to have, say, a quick exit strategy. There may be some compressed pricing in there, but, you know, you're looking at an auction for certain advantages, and maybe it doesn't fit for everybody. So we've tried to account for that in both solutions.
Why do you think adoption is slow? Like, what are the issues, you think?
Well, I think for the most part, it's a little bit of a couple things. One, understanding that the technology is not going to replace them. And commercial real estate brokers, I think, especially those that really have never used it, right, if they've been in the industry 30, 40 years, everything was on a notepad and a pencil and a phone. And so are obviously the younger brokers coming up. They don't know anything different than how online power can help you. And so what we've tried to do with the adoption is make it easy and try to make our brokers understand that this is not to replace them or push them out of the marketplace, but really to give them good tools, good powerful analytics to scale their business, frankly, to take on more listings, to sell more, to have more clients, and to see execution on their clients' deals go up.
Hmm. Okay, interesting. So I see that a lot of VC or venture capital money is now involved in real estate, like tech startup. But we've also seen how WeWork rose and is now going through some financial issues. What is your comment on that?
Well, without question, I would say in the last 2 to 5 years, the venture capital money, the investment dollars in real estate tech has skyrocketed. I mean, there was literally a handful. I was at the Colliers Conference in Phoenix a couple months ago, and they notated that there was maybe 10 to 12 of these startup ventures just a couple years ago, and now there are hundreds of real estate tech startups. To the tune of about $12.6 billion of venture capital money. And as you mentioned with WeWork, just an example of how companies are trying to leverage space in more creative ways to help support tech businesses and pivot businesses in and out of spaces. You know, WeWork, though, is certainly having their issues. You know, they're having to float some debt to try to cover their rents. So, you know, they don't all go out in a blaze of glory. Some yeah. succeed, some don't. But I can tell you that with the equity firm that purchased 10X last year, what they saw in our product, what they saw in 10X was a combination of expertise in real estate and an expertise in technology, because those two have to marry very well. Mm. You certainly can't be an expert in real estate and just not understand how to integrate analytics, data, and technology, and vice versa. You know, tech guys in the Valley, if they've never run a closing or sure. understand what a rent roll or ROI is, it's a problem. So,
okay. All right. Let's do one more question before we have to go to break. So what new features are out there on the tech side to assist brokers?
Well, there's a lot of great features that we're starting to implement as far as dashboard reporting, literally dropping the veil, allowing our brokers to see who's interested in their properties, Google Maps that literally zero down to the person that hit their website, looked at their deal at that particular moment, went into the data vault, looked at documents on their asset. So this is the type of transparent data that brokers have just never had. It's very powerful for them to start to see this information and then can start to leverage that in their deals.
Okay, great. All right, we're going to go to a quick break, and so we'll be right back.
Imagine what it would feel like to lose everything. Your job, your home, your family, your dignity. This has happened to thousands of the men, women, veterans, and young adults we serve at Working Wardrobes. What do we do to help? We provide career development services, life skills workshops, job skills training. We provide the perfect interview outfit, and we get clients placed in jobs. Call Working Wardrobes, 714-210-2460. Donate, volunteer, invest, hire.
When it comes to pioneers in their respective industries, we all know the Apples, Starbucks, and Trader Joe's of the world. In the realm of recruiting, Decision Toolbox is the industry's best-kept secret. With 90% of their business from referrals and repeat customers, for over 20 years, Decision Toolbox's U.S.-based team of recruiters, sourcers, professional writers, quality personnel, and tech support has perfected a Six Sigma approach to talent management. No matter the size of the project, Decision Toolbox delivers incredible results. A cost per hire less than half of what contingency firms charge, with the winning candidate presented in an average of 14 days, all with a 12-month candidate warranty. With results like that, Decision Toolbox won't be a secret for long. Visit us at www.dtoolbox.com for more information.
All right, back to Bart and his fellow U of M grad here.
Go Blue.
All right, let's switch gears just a little bit. So let's talk about just the commercial real estate market in general. What's your finger on the pulse on that?
Yeah, really interesting. A lot of people are anxious with the real estate market, both commercial and housing, because they're waiting for that bubble. They're waiting for this dream we're somewhat living in here the last few years of staggered appreciation. They're waiting for that to crash. And I've got some, I think, pleasant news for you. You know, we don't see the doomsday coming anytime soon.
Residential and commercial and or?
Both. Okay. Both, really. We'll talk about housing, but yeah. Especially with commercial real estate. You know, they like to use the inning analogy in baseball, like are we in the seventh inning or eighth yeah. inning? And I would say that it really doesn't matter what inning we're in, because an inning could be a long time, depending on how many batters come to the plate. An inning could span 2.5 hours. And so to say we're in the sixth or seventh inning, it's really irrelevant. We've just had some really interesting signals Obviously, the labor market pushing out great numbers. I mean, certainly unemployment is at record lows. In fact, I think I heard the other day at an event, a Connect Live event, that L.A. has the lowest unemployment that's ever been recorded. So certainly that's compressing things. They talked about inflation, but of course we haven't seen as many of the inflationary signs that we thought we were going to see. And certainly, again, a lot of these sectors in commercial real estate, interest rates still remain low. Demand is still there in a lot of sectors. I mean, obviously, retail. If you've ever watched the news, you certainly see, stores are closing. Yeah. Toys R Us, Sears. Yeah. Certainly a lot of issues with some of the box store retail. But a lot of those are starting to pivot and get more creative in their offerings. And so we're starting to see pop-up Target stores, pop-up Starbucks. They're changing the way in which box concrete retail is working, especially online. But I right now with commercial real estate, the market in a lot of, especially in a lot of the stronger markets like Austin and Florida and California, market's very good, very stable.
And you hit something that I have a concern about. It's rising interest rates. Are you not seeing that as having a negative effect? Granted, interest rates are low, historic low, but we do know they're going to start rising.
We do know that, but I still, we just still haven't seen too much impact yet. I mean, if that number continues to creep up at a steady rate, perhaps. I do know it's starting to impact, I guess, a little bit on the demand side for housing, but yeah, that's not really slowing a lot of people up, even on the housing side. I mean, again, prices are appreciating very much so. And again, you have more stability in the marketplace because you don't have the sub-market loans. You don't have the subprime events that we had happen in 2007, 2008 that led to that massive crash. So, again, demand is high. Inventories are low. And again, a city like Austin, as an example, again, incredibly low unemployment, a lot of growth there. And so housing, for example, very, very strong in some submarkets.
Okay. You mentioned earlier about international buyers. Explain a little to the listeners a little more how that works with the international buyers. I mean, to me, clearly, they're not coming to see the property, right, unless they send out their scout. But how does that normally work?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've seen a lot of influx of Chinese money. We've seen some Canadian buyers. In fact, the Guinness Book of World Records largest e-commerce trade of $96 million occurred on our platform. Manhattan Towers up in L.A. sold to a Canadian buyer. So clearly we have seen the influx of, look, they understand the market's stable. They understand that they're going to get a good return. And so a lot of Chinese money, a lot of Russian money, a lot of South American money, depending on the submarket. What they like about this sort of platform, as I mentioned earlier, is it's turned the world somewhat flat there in that everyone can participate. It truly reduces the barrier of, say, a pocket listing or someone saying, hey, I know the three individuals that are going to be interested in this asset locally. Now you can start to drop in buyers from other markets, other cities, other countries. And all of a sudden, the execution goes up. But more importantly, the buyers, especially in these other countries, they really feel like they're getting a fair shake. Because if they want to press and they want to bid more, for example, they can bid as long as they want to and then eventually drop out if they want to. Yeah. So the power is in their hands.
Does the auction usually have like a time cutoff, like on an eBay buy, or does it go until there's no more offers?
Very interesting. So on our auctions, typically they run for 48 hours, so a couple of days. But on that last day when the bidding is finalizing, the auction will not stop if people continue to bid. So there's no clock on the bidders. The bidders drive when they stop. So if there's two bidders and they want to bid for the next 5 hours back and forth, we certainly allow them to do that.
Is there any inherent, I'll use the word protection for the buyer, if again we go into an international buyer and or someone maybe East Coast buying West Coast, what safety mechanisms are in there for them that the building is what it is represented to be?
Sure. Well, there's a couple things there. Of course, what makes the platform convenient for anybody out of the local market, say out of state or internationally, is all the due diligence is online. So all the information with respect to CapEx, rent rolls, the tenants, the leases, all environmental, anything impacting the asset itself, all of that is there for anyone to go through, read, and understand clearly what the asset's about. Certainly a lot of international investors or out-of-state investors have had local individuals say, take a look at the asset, and they do conduct inspections. And we also work very diligently to qualify the individuals participating as well. So as you mentioned, a protection for a buyer, we also protect them against other potential buyers that maybe are not qualified. You know, maybe the money's not there. They don't have the proper financing in place, or they come to the asset very late and they're just not educated enough to buy that asset. So we do a good job, too, of also ensuring that the bidders are on a very not only equal playing field, but it's also secured for them knowing that the individuals participating are qualified.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So let's switch gears just a bit. We talked a little bit about the housing market, residential housing. Any comments on the pulse of that?
Yeah, again, we've seen surprising jumps in certain markets. I mean, obviously, you know, you can look at Washington and you know, the rumor is that, you know, Amazon may be in line there for looking at that second headquarter hub to be in that D.C. area because of, obviously, Jeff Bezos owning the Washington Post and certainly a lot of land in that area. But, you know, D.C. is very interesting. On the Northern Virginia side, a lot of strong housing because the defense contractors are picking up, especially labor there. But on the northern side in the district in, say, Northern Maryland, not so much. It's cooled off. Their healthcare education industries cooling off. So, you know, even in, say, the D.C. metro area, you can see a little bit of bifurcation in how the economy and labor is impacting housing demand in just that market. But as I mentioned earlier, a market like Austin, some of the markets out here in California, still very, very strong because, again, demand is high because inventory is just not there in a lot of these places that people want to be at.
And what surprises me about that, not as much about Austin or Texas, but here in California and the high tax state with the new tax laws and the SALT, it's surprising that I haven't seen a slowdown from my perspective.
Yeah, I mean, there's still, you know, you still see, I think the inverse migration, from my understanding, the numbers still continue to flow out a little more than they flow in. But again, seeing strong numbers in California, qualified buyers, inventory remains low in a lot of the hot parts of the market, including the Inland Empire, where, of course, devastated 10 years ago. But now people, again, understand bang for the buck. They can get much more square footage for the price. And are willing to do that nasty Southern California commute on the freeways, which, you know, a lot of people just refuse to do in other parts of the country.
Yeah. All right, we're getting near the end. What can 10X do for buyers, and then what can it do to help brokers?
Well, clearly what we have established in the marketplace is understanding that technology is here to stay, especially in commercial real estate, also in residential real estate. And that buyers love this platform because it truly, as I mentioned earlier, allows for a great amount of transparency, allows them to purchase, allows them equal footing if they're interested in a property that they can bid or offer as much as they want. And that just doesn't happen necessarily on the retail side. And then in commercial real estate, the same way, technology, giving brokers a lot more tools, a lot more analytics, data, automating and trying to streamline the real estate transaction process, which is a very complicated process, and trying to pull a lot of those actions online, closing, DocuSigning, signing documents electronically online. A lot of these things have slowly started to integrate into the market. Our job is to kind of put it all together and streamline that process for our sellers and our brokers. And I think we're going to do that. I mean, it won't be too long, Bart, before truly the entire process is a click of the mouse.
Are you the only online auction for property?
There are a handful of others, I would say, that are attempting to do this.
Yeah.
But, you know, only a couple boots walked on the moon, and we're prepared to do that when it comes to commercial real estate and technology.
Great. All right. So, Todd, it's been a great pleasure of having you in the studio with me today. And if you've listened to my podcast, this is not going to come to a surprise. I have the honor of asking you the final thought question. If you haven't listened, then this is going to be a big surprise for you.
Uh-oh.
So please share with us your ultimate lesson learned over your career as a real estate professional.
Well, I would say the lesson that I have learned the most over 15 years of doing this with so many different personalities in the business is, frankly, to be very honest, very upfront especially when it comes to the disposition of real estate. Because what I've learned is buyers and sellers and brokers don't want to be told a story.
Yeah.
They want to be told up front, you know, tell it to me how it is. Is it good? Is it bad? Or is it ugly? And what we have learned is trust is the most important thing in this industry. And to gain trust, you got to be straight as an arrow, and you have to be upfront about it. And if you're not, you know, you'll lose that trust. And that's a currency you just can't get back once you withdraw it.
That's a good one. Similar to our industry as well.
That's correct.
Todd, what is your guilty pleasure?
Well, I hate to admit this on the air, but I love college football. And Paul, I'm going to have to, you know, pull you back in here, but I'm a big House fan, Michigan guy. So my guilty pleasure is every Saturday binge watching football, college football, and especially on the Big Ten Network, ESPN, ABC, and affiliates, wherever Michigan football or Michigan sports lie.
Selling subscriptions now through the Zambergen Report.
That's right.
Do you got your boys watching as well?
They have their number one Michigan jerseys on, and they're starting to do the Hail to the Victors chant, and I'm starting to put away money right now, thanks to you, to help fund their education to Ann Arbor, which will be over $100,000 by the time they go.
That's right.
As an out-of-state student.
All right, this has been a lot of fun. Todd, thanks again for joining us in the studio. And for those who would like to learn more about Todd or 10X, you can visit him at www.10X.com/commercial. Thanks so much, everyone who's tuned in, and we look forward to being back in the studio next week. Cheers.
Tune in next week for the latest edition of the Zandbergen Report, Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Catch up on our recent shows by visiting www.bartzandbergen.com. Interested in being a featured guest on our show or have a question you'd like to hear us answer on the Zandbergen Report? Email podcast@bartzandbergen.com.
The Zandbergen Report is a production of OC Talk Radio and is provided for educational purposes only. The content of this program and the views of the guests should not be considered as recommendations by OC Talk Radio or investment advice from the host, Bart Zandbergen, or any other entity attached to this production. Investors should always consult qualified financial, investment, tax, or legal professionals prior to investing.